microphone or because I'm short, but because it's more comfortable. I've always enjoyed being short. As my dad said, there was no brain in a thigh bone. So always reassuring. Anyway, first of all, let's think about this mic. Okay.
Let's be a bit nearer to you.
Okay. yes, firstly, let's think about, we're going to think about helping others, but let's think a little bit about helping ourselves, because we're going to talk about how we can help people in their material way particularly, but those that we're going to talk about have a much stronger opportunity of demonstrating their faith than we do today. And faith is a primary way in which we must strive to please God. And in many ways, of course, the Victorians did many things for us, but one of the things they've done is destroy very much our reliance on faith. But until they came along, really, we depended on natural forces, the wind and the sun, and they harnessed the forces of water by a simple water wheel. But with the use of steam, which then changed those natural forces in some way, we began to have engines. And as soon as we got engines, those engines developed and increased, and we relied more and more on those engines. We now rely more and more on electricity. We rely more and more on physical things around us to sustain our lives. And whereas the Africans particularly have none of those things, their faith can be very strong in God, because they know that the rain that they depend upon comes from God. Our faith is very much weakened by the environment in which we live, so that we find that we rely very much on say electricity, we rely on these physical things. We also rely very much on insurance and on banks and on those aspects which detract from that total trust in God. If we're not careful, we pretend that our faith comes only when we're not able to cope ourselves, when all those options have disappeared. Then we say we have faith. And people often say, well, you know, I held my wealth in a very light hand. And yet you find they insure it, they lock all their doors, they protect it, they don't really want to share it. And again, one of the aspects which is quite strong in Africa is that they share things. They have very little, but those that have are expected to share. And my son runs a farm out there, and find it very difficult to the concept of sharing, because okay, he buys the seed, he gives it to the workers, they plant the seed, he pays the workers, but when the fruition comes, whose is it? They've planted it, right? And so they want to share it, and whereas we might see that as thieving, they see it as sharing. And so to run profitably a farm in Africa is not possible. You share some with the monkeys and you share some with the local inhabitants, and you have quite a reasonable living out of it. But there you go. So they have a much better idea of sharing, a much cleaner idea of faith, and they know that they rely on God, and that can get very obscured in our own society. And of course they are, of course, much more in the mould which Christ recommended we should be. And I put down a quotation here which we all know. It's rather long, and if I had these mechanical things at my hand, I'd throw it up on the screen. But why do you worry about clothes? See how the lilies of the field grow. They do not labour or spin. Yet I tell you that even Solomon in all his splendour was not dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothed the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, will he not much more clothe you, O you of little faith? So don't worry saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For the pagans run after all these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. If we could build that into our lives, how much better we would be. And so although we're here to talk about the way in which we can help, mainly materially, because we strive to help them spiritually, other people, they are in fact living a life closer to God than we ourselves naturally in our daily, everyday life find ourselves in that position. But of course then we go on to other verses, and as in the scriptures, one has to find the balance. And the scriptures give us plenty of options, and it's up to us, using our free will, using our intelligence, to decide where we are going to pitch our lives at. James says, of course, what good is it, my brothers, if a man claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such faith save him? Suppose a brother or sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you say to him, go, I wish you well, keep warm, be well fed, but does nothing about his physical needs, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself, if it is not accompanied by action, is dead. And therefore we are asked to try and help those who are not clothed and fed. And then of course we go on to Paul, who says to us, in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, we command you, brothers, to keep away from every brother who is idle and does not live according to the teaching you receive from us. For you yourselves know how you ought to follow our example, for we were not idle when we were with you. We did not, nor did we eat anyone's food without paying for it. On the contrary, we worked night and day, laboring and toiling, so that we would not be a burden to any of you. We did this not because we do not have the right to such help, but in order to make ourselves a model for you to follow. For even when we were with you, we gave you this rule, if a man will not work, he shall not eat. So, we have to encourage people to work so that they obtain their daily bread, but bearing in mind that what we produce is against, very often, the faith we should be showing. And so it is an exercise for all of us to look at our lives and see that we don't exclude faith from the things we are doing, and concentrate more, as I'm afraid we do in the West, on materialism, on getting through our day of busyness, and of forgetting God. So let's make sure we bring God to the top of our working life and not all the industry and the rushing about. So now on to Africans particularly. I don't know much about Eastern Europeans and how much help we can provide for them and their attitude. But the attitude of the African very much is, sufficient today is what I need. And they do not build for the future. And their culture will never, well, their culture is not set to build a future empire or anything really which would rival the West. So in order to help them, we have to concentrate on short-term projects, something that's going to, you know, build me a house in 2 or 3 years' time, 10 years' time, if I work hard and manage to save up for a mortgage and all that sort of stuff, is not on their horizon at all. And I'm afraid their pleasures are very limited. And food and clothing is really what their horizons are about. So things we're doing at the moment in the area of Chapata, where I work, which is in Zambia, concentrate very much on trying to bring up their general welfare, as opposed to being specific to a person, to try and bring up the general welfare of the group. And we're doing a clinic there which is coming on rather slowly, much more slowly than we would like, simply because we have tried to involve the local community in it, and that's committees and very much how many bags of cement do we need? Well, we see they want 10 times as many as they actually need because they have other agendas. And so it's actually moving very slowly, simply that we are trying to work with that community. On the other hand, we're building a church which probably only started 2 or 3 weeks ago and could be finished in 2 or 3 weeks if we kept pressing ahead with it. The other things we're trying to do are beekeeping, on the basis then that each person can have their own beehive on their own piece of land and be responsible for it, which takes away some of the difficulty of if someone's looking after half a dozen beehives, then where's half a dozen contents of the beehives going? At least if they're looking after their own beehive, then that's their responsibility. And we are setting up a centre which is going to be based on this church we're doing, because to me a church should be open 7 days a week and be active, and actually the building itself should be fully used in some way for the community. And hopefully there we will actually be able to extract the honey for them, pay them for what they give us, and then sell the honey, or some brothers and sisters will sell the honey. We've got as far as having sent seven brethren, as it happens, on courses, so they've been instructed locally on the way in which they should keep bees. We have made the beehives. We're now getting to the process of actually, we know who they're going to, but we've got to decide exactly where they're sited, and we've got to provide them with some sort of clothing and stuff. And I'll just, to give some idea what's involved, is obviously the veil, or whatever they, the hat, the veil and a smock is £30, the gloves they need is £10, a smoker to quieten the bees down. I understand recently, whereas everyone thought that the smoker actually made them a bit dozy, apparently it makes them think that fire is coming. They gorge on honey, which then fills their abdomen so much they can't bend to sting you. That's what I'm told. So you're safe. So you use smoke. They think fire's coming. Anyway, that's so. But so you do need this smoker thing. A complete suit, gloves and smoker, the whole thing. This is just prices off the internet. £83, and there's seven of them. And then processing, extractor, kettle you need, and jars to put it in, sort of another £100. So we're talking of relatively small money. Wharton has supported most of this activity, and I'm sure Wharton would continue to support that and see that little enterprise through. Another thing we're trying to do is jam making. The mangoes grow wild on the tree, the mangoes fall on the ground and are virtually unused. They're not particularly good quality mango, but I suspect they would make fairly good jam. And the sugar cane grows out there. So again, some organisation is needed, but we would hope to use this little building, which is in the centre of Chipata town, very convenient for doing that. And the gas ring to boil the stuff up, and the gas cylinders, a pan, strainer, thermometer, utensils and jars, about £200. So again, not a great deal of money, but if you multiply it enough times, of course it gets big money. Vegetable gardens, again, something that's fairly instant. If they can grow vegetables, tomatoes grow well, leeks, cabbages, they're big on cabbages. If they can have something they can see that they're going to get within a matter of weeks, as opposed to something over the horizon, then they're much more interested to concentrate on that. So again, one needs to dig a well, because irrigation is the important thing. They have as much water as we do here. The problem is that it's not controlled. Most of it runs off and goes down to the sea, but the more dams and reservoirs and wells that one can produce, then the better. And you see those pictures there are of work on the farm, and you may see on this left one there's a fairly big lake there, which we totally made ourselves, and it was done by hand, wheelbarrows. We had the option of getting a JCB in and scooping it out and doing it, but we could do it with the local labour and 30 wheelbarrows and pay the local labour for doing it. So we went for the 30 wheelbarrows and local labour, and over the course of a couple of years, there's a decent pond there, in which fish do very well, which is another avenue down which I'd like to follow more, because fish, they've actually got a fish for it, to get the fish, but if they have the opportunity to, then they can get themselves a meal by going out and fishing. So it's them doing work to obtain what they need. But anyway, vegetable garden, we'd like you sink a well, really, if you can find a suitable place to do that, and one usually can. It's about £100 to get a well down. Hand pump is probably about £200. That's a bit expensive. We're looking at pedal pumps. They do pumps where you get the treadle pumps, which are much cheaper, and they do actually do some sort of bicycle type pump, which we're looking at the possibilities of getting, and then irrigation pipes of some sort of description. Fish ponds is something that needs more investigation, and it's a matter of time. My sons are out there, but one of them is the farmer one. He's got a 400-acre farm and 100 cattle and 100 sheep, and he grows maize and he rears pigs and he builds the clinic, and there's a limit to what I can expect him to do. So it is a question of labour to actually concentrate on these particular projects. There's plenty of projects to be done, but we do need people to organise it. And so I'd love to put up more ponds in which we could stock with fish, and then that's a self-sustaining thing, providing the pond is deep enough so that it keeps some water throughout the year. And again, if you go down far enough, you can, at the moment, we've been very fortunate with rain, really. But if you go down deep enough, God willing, you can find a level which is always at the level of the water, and we'll keep a small pond going in which the fry can exist through the drier period of the year to re-emerge as bigger fish in due course. And then that's anything from £500 to £2,000, depending where and what sort of things involved. Another thing we're wishing to do, and that is that one of the problems that I think we have as a Christadelphian community is we're strong on our doctrinal issues, but not so strong on our community involvement. And I think a lot of churches, particularly again in Africa, they are the centre of their lives. They look after the funerals and all these things. So I think we do need to develop a more of a community sort of sense. Although, having said that, I had someone, they were in trouble paying their children's university fees in South Africa, and they got three children in university over there, and the university wouldn't release their results until they paid their fees. And so she was stuck for £3,000to get these fees paid. And she is someone I mentioned yesterday that I talked to about the truth. And she is actually a Zimbabwean over here because, her husband is still there, but he was a reporter and he's just cut off really in Zimbabwe. The three children, they were down in South Africa studying, and she's in England working. Anyway, so she's a Mormon. We talk about the truth and she agrees, we're absolutely right, she's going to talk to her clergyman, etc., but she won't leave the Mormons. So I said, well, you've got this problem, you go to the Mormons, you see, and they should help you. If it was one of our community, we'd take it seriously and see what we could do to help you with this problem. So she took it to the Mormons. No, they only spend money on preaching. So she didn't actually get any help from the Mormons. But unfortunately, she goes into the Mormon church, and she feels there's a spirit in there, and this is it, you know. So we're perhaps not such a bad community in that direction, but I think I'm sure we could improve. And in this little Africa thing, I'm hoping that not only do we build the church there, but we get a little community going and develop it, and can actually use the place to promote work and the possibility of getting employment, and also like to construct on there washing facilities, because you know they have no washing facilities, no running water, most of them. They don't use toilet paper, and that just isn't on the menu at all. And so to be clean is pretty difficult really for them. And I felt that if we could put up a shower block, some toilets and wash hand basins, and charge them a small amount, perhaps 200 kwachas, which is about 2.5p, and if they're working they can earn about £1, it would make them respect the place and give them the opportunity of going and having a shower, using a toilet and wash hand basins. So that's something that we're hoping to do, and that sort of activity, which building a shower block, as I say, putting half a dozen showers and probably four or half a dozen loos and wash hand basins, about £3,000, that sort of money. And then, as I say, if we charged 200 kwachas, 2.5p, it would pay an attendant to look after it, and if we got 40 people through the turnstile, then that would actually cover the cost of the attendant, and we need a bit more for water because we have to pay for the water. But again, Wharton Meeting has actually paid to have water put onto this site and electricity onto this site, so that's an advantage. Keeping a cow is working fairly well. The difficulty with the project, which is not a Christadelphian project at all, it's a national project, is a good project, and it was working well, except they didn't get their head round producing either a bull or semen to reinvigorate the cow, so that the milk yield runs out after it's after 9 months or so of the first calf being born. So they've got to get their head around that, and insemination has its difficulties in that the sperm will only last for 2 weeks, and it has to be kept in a flask, and you know it's a bit un-African to manage to do that. So to get a bull that circulates is probably going to be the better option, and is an option that will work. But that's quite good, because they can see the immediate results of, they get so many litres of milk every day, which is an enormous bonus to them. Keeping a goat is a similar sort of operation, which is being tried and worked. Unfortunately, a little bit that when you're hard pushed, then to sell the goat is an option, and sometimes I'm afraid that's the option they take. So it's difficult to help them, but they certainly can benefit from help, and if we can school it properly and organise it properly, then I'm sure we can discharge that commandment of Christ to care for those that are in need, and particularly those within his flock. Chickens are, well, we tried rabbits and ducks, but they tend to need too much intensive care. That was our problem, to actually look after them and keep them away from the predators that are there, and also disappearing overnight. You don't really want them to disappear overnight. Chickens, when we went out there, we thought we'd do chickens as being a very nice little package, because again there's no refrigerator, so if you can take home a live chicken, which is always the way they're transported, seems very unkind, but chickens seem to be quite happy with their wings up there and being carried along like this. I don't know, they seem to, well, they have to put up with it, but they don't make any fuss. But that's the best way, of course, of getting a chicken, because then you can let it run around your little house for a while until the moment comes when you kill it and cook it and eat it, because there's no refrigeration or anything of that that nature. And I was going to get into doing these sun cookers, which will work, but they depend on a good sun. And if you've half cooked your chicken and the sun goes out, are you going to eat your chicken or are you going to throw it away? So I didn't want to get into that because I could see we'd give more health problems than we would actually help if you're, unless you're very careful. Because, you know, although the sun is there, you can't rely on it when in the middle of you're cooking your chicken. But when we went out there, we thought we'd do chickens. But really the intensive way of rearing chickens, which was the way we were going, is just fraught with problems, immunisation and all the other things that, you know, just the local environment was not conducive to rearing chickens quickly. Chickens running around the farmyard are fine, but again you couldn't say it was a business operation, but if people keep chickens, then that's useful to them. And unfortunately, although they grow cotton out there, the making of clothes is no good because you can't beat Oxfam for getting clothes. So Oxfam and all those sort of things that we have done in this country has destroyed a lot of their industry, because they could have had a nice industry if the West had actually converted the cotton which is grown there into fabric, and then let the local people make it up into clothes, then that would have been a super business and a sensible way forward. But to take all their cotton away and process it somewhere else and send them back free clothes from Oxfam is which are then the clothes for Oxfam are taken down to the docks. The Indians then take them, transport them, and make a fortune out of selling them, which again is just is not good sense. I'm afraid the West's involvement is all big business orientated and not genuinely thought out charitable work. You see very little of that genuinely thought out charitable work actually going on there. The same with copper. I mean, Zambia has the copper, but you can't buy copper pipes in Zambia, you can't buy any copper items in Zambia. All the raw material is just ripped away and has been for decades, processed over here, and not even sold back to Zambia. Iron pipes and the old threading things is what you have to do in Zambia. Anyway, I've rattled on for a while. You know, it's that's the scene as I see it. So there are things we can do. My feeling is that they need to be organised, and if we can get brethren and sisters, it would be lovely if there were more brethren and sisters where we'd go out there for a period of time and actually devote themselves to looking after a number of projects. A number of voluntary organisations go out there, and we see quite a lot of these voluntary workers, but they're given very little support. They're rather left to their own devices, and you know, a lot of things happen, but not particularly efficiently. There we are. So support and people to be involved is invaluable. So we've got some pictures there of what goes on. We have this AfriCraft, which is fine, they carve some beautiful work. The standard of improvement with our involvement, because my eldest son is a graphic designer and he has artistic talents, and he has improved the standard of their carving very significantly, which is good. But it's really producing stuff to titillate our market, and I'd much rather that they actually produce stuff which they can use there and then and feed themselves and actually, you know, directly benefit them. It's nice for it to be sold and the money goes back to them and we try and put it in community work, but they'd be much happier if they were actually working on the site producing stuff which they actually can use. Any questions?
What about fruit ground, like sort of pineapples or fruit trees that
yes.
that could be grown? Do you have that?
Irrigation is the the key. Mm. Plenty of water. Well, at the moment, God willing, in Zambia there is plenty of water, but it does need to be organised. And because when the expats were there in Zimbabwe, it was a marvellous place simply because the rain never stopped falling. You know, it was always irrigation taking place. You'd go onto any of these farms and the water was being pumped all the time, and great big reservoirs were built. And with that sort of application, then it would be a breadbasket, absolutely.
But Zambia, I think, is one of the most peaceful of the African countries, isn't it?
Mm.
So you're talking about this great work going on in the easiest part of Africa.
Mm.
It's difficult to think how that could be translated to some of the other places in which you've got wars going on. And
terrible. We have this.
How do we help people in those places, in refugee camps?
I know. You have this problem with whatever we give, as to what level do you give it at? Do you give it to somebody in this country, who needs a childminder for their family? Do you give it to somebody in Zambia who is going to stay alive, but not in any sort of comfort? Or do you give it to Rwanda and the likes of Ethiopia, people that just aren't going to stay alive? I'm afraid when you get down to the Ethiopian level, then you're never going to succeed. You just feed them to keep them alive for another 6 months, and then they're ultimately going to die. It's a very sad situation, but I think some of the countries are in such a state that you only feed them just to put off the day of the day of one's death for a longer period. And so the activity of giving them the truth and preaching the gospel is, of course, the biggest thing we can give them. But we are incumbent upon to try and assist them with their daily living.
Presumably, Graham, once people have joined the church, they begin to relax the business of African ethics of helping themselves a bit here and there, don't they? Do they get the idea that perks are not built into life?
Yes. They do. We set up the farm initially in a response to begging letters that we got, because I do this Bible correspondence course which we send out to Africa, and obviously, as Duncan will know, well, we all know, you get a stream of begging type letters. And so we thought, well, rather than put £5 in the post, which is just encouraging them to send another begging letter, because that's the easiest way then for them to get money, which is what they would take, the easiest way, we would invite them to come to the farm. Just write them a letter and say, if you come to the farm, we will give you work, which happened. But unfortunately, all our courses were in English, really. So it was English speaking and writing people that were on the courses, and they didn't really want to be farm labourers. They were looking for something better than farm labourers. And so after 2 or 3 months of being a farm labourer, they decided that that was not the way for them. So their begging letters were not as desperate as they make them sound. And they certainly wanted to think that being Christadelphians gave them some higher status on the farm than the rest of the employees, which we really didn't want to cultivate, as you say, if you make you can have rice Christians. If you put a bag of rice inside and say you join us and you'll get a bag of rice every week, well, they join. Not a problem. But to join for real reasons is more serious. And but if we can develop little projects with a group of Christadelphians, they sort of work. You get fallings out, but no more than you get in this country, I think. You can make it work. I like the idea. At one stage, I felt that I ought to put roads in for people, because you go to a village only 12 miles off the main road, as I went a couple of years ago, and they hadn't seen a white man in that village since 1925. running around, white man. but they were only 12 miles off the beaten track, and yet they were very, very cut off. I mean, driving the vehicle there was fun, some of them would have a bike and push their wares on a bike. What they carry on a bike, as in any of you Africa, I mean, they carry a 12-foot long tin sheet, you know, rolled up vertically on the back of the bike. And the bikes are, I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Perhaps you should buy the bikes and something, go in the transport business, some of your logistics.
Yes.
Is there any sign that they're going to be able to carry on the things you've set up on their own when you can no longer do it?
I it's difficult. It's difficult.
When you talk about things not being efficient, is that because you reckon it's just the African psyche is not to be efficient, or they've not been shown how to be efficient? They don't know how to do it.
No, it's the psyche of sufficient today, you know, why bother about tomorrow? You know, that I'm afraid, whereas our psyche is, let's work for tomorrow. You know, many of us, I'm afraid, you know, being workaholics, we work for tomorrow and never actually enjoy today. And that's
Oh well, I
don't
know, that really is what like Bushy was just saying about planting trees.
Yes,
I mean, I've been trying to get some planted, but they don't get any fruit for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not really interested in 3 years' time.
No.
Well, palms, which are very important, really, because of the oil and they cook and stuff like that, it may take 10 years before they get a decent harvest.
Yes.
That's a long time, but there's plenty of water underneath the ground.
But you've got, you've got to water them. You know, you've got to get the water up.
Plants will go down
and get it. Bananas are quite good if you plant them in the right place, but they've got to be again down by the river.
But they can't project the 10 years ahead, can they?
Well, they would. Yes, I mean, if one could establish, well, again, that even the fruit trees, to get decent fruit off of them, you know, you've got to have water about. And bringing water to the surface. I mean, the best place to store it is actually ground water, not lakes and ponds, because that evaporates. So the best way to store it is in the ground water. But you do need boreholes, or you do need wells in order to get that water into a usable place. And so wells and boreholes, I think, are very good things. And again, they don't tend to maintain their pumps, but pumps are pretty reliable, and certainly go for 5 or 10 years. And so bringing the water, to me, keeping water and bringing the water into a usable condition is one of the best things almost that we can be involved in doing. But again it takes some work. If one can develop these fish ponds and lakes, the fish grow very quickly and very well. Tilapia out there, they go quickly, and they actually thrive on you know, manure, dung, etc., from the cattle and the sheep, so actually, or even the pigs. So if you can organise that to get into the water, that seems to develop them. Yes.
Presumably, there'd be a great problem if you had a reservoir because of algae. Unless you stored the water underground, or had wells
that sunk. Yes, we don't have an algae problem. No, I mean, that reservoir there, I mean, because it was that lake there, it will nearly dry out, and it goes down to a pond, a fairly deep pond, but not much bigger than this room. Now, whether that affects the development of algae, I don't know, but we haven't actually have an algae problem. Although I do know that there were major algae problems, and they brought some creature in from somewhere and it ate all the algae and it went.
Is there chalk
out there? No, it's limestone. Limestone, but
limestone,
not sure.
Yeah.
The best way of contacting algae is sub-aquatic plants.
Right. Yes.
Just interesting what you were saying, that African psyche, which you like to try with short termism. And you mentioned the not kind of empire-minded. My African history is pretty shaky, but have there not been what you might call African empires in the far, the Zulus and Ethiopians under Haile Selassie, for instance?
Very tiny ones, really. You go around there, the Zimbabwe, Great Zimbabwe, and it really is a few stones and, you know, a bit of a castle. But obviously South America and that sort of thing, yes, but not really. I don't think you'll find any Africans really. They never moved into the tribal, you know, warriors and that sort of thing, capturing other people and stealing and pillaging. I'm sure they're up to that. Mind you, the tribes differ. Where we are is Bembas, and they're quite a laid-back people. You get the Zulus and they're warriors. And again, the dancings are quite different. Some are warlike dances and others are much more passive dances. So you've got, you know, an enormous country, really, with very different peoples. And then again, you go over to West Africa and the Ghanaians, you know, quite smiley, laid-back people. The Nigerians are quite aggressive, nasty people. A generalisation for you, isn't it? You probably all know Nigerians and all who are totally different. But I have a Nigerian tenant, and he's okay. But generally, I've found them. But generally, the Ghanaians next door are fine.
How much is HIV and AIDS impacting the Ghana?
Bad, really. Bad. But they seem to live through it. We've got a lot of orphans. We've got actually just developing an orphanage on the farm now. We've got three orphans from brothers and sisters or workers, and we've got a fourth one coming from a brother in the Copper Belt. So we're actually putting a little orphanage home. We're converting what we had was a grinding mill and a shop, which they opened and had a grinding mill down in the village a couple of miles away. So we packed up our grinding mill, but we've got that, and we're turning that into a bit of an orphanage, you know, hoping to put someone in there as a mother to look after them. But it's a problem. How massive, I don't know. Whether it will, you know, destroy the whole... No, I don't think it will. I mean, I think the immunity that they seem to build up and the luck of the draw and all the rest of it. I think many of them, I do know that they are quite serious about trying to avoid it. Mm. You know, to the extent that someone who's married to somebody and he thinks she's got AIDS, and I think they're probably right, you know, says, I'm not going to kill myself, you know, so... so some of them are serious in trying to avoid it.
And is the government active in
condoms? Well, they dish out free condoms, I suppose. That's the you know, the real extent of their involvement. And the drugs are beginning to come through. Yes, they're beginning to come through and be available. They're a little bit pricey. Yeah.
Going back to your earlier point about sharing. Okay, I picked up the point about individual families being encouraged to have a beehive.
Yes.
So if a family has a beehive, presumably some of the honey produced could be used as swaps, go for tomatoes or sweet corn?
Yes, it is. I mean, it's a big swapping society, yes. Yes, I mean, not much.